You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
There have been 8 anti-Semitic attacks in New York before the horrific knife attack at a Hanukkah party in Monsey, New York on Saturday night. There was another anti-Semitic attack in New York on Monday. A woman apparently went on a slapping spree in Crown Heights, targeting Jewish women in a part of Brooklyn with a large Hasidic community, bringing the number of anti-Semitic attacks in the New York area over a single week to 10. These attacks came just a couple of weeks after a mass shooting at a kosher supermarket in Jersey City, which itself came a little more than a year after the terror attack at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, where 11 people were massacred and more were injured. In Iowa this week, a woman ran over a teenage girl with her car because the kid was a Mexican. After her arrest, during which she made a series of derogatory statements about Latinos, according to CNN, statements that doubtless could have been lifted from a Trump rally, police also wound up charging this woman with running down a 12-year-old black boy an hour before she ran over that 14-year-old Mexican girl. And in Wisconsin, the day after Christmas, a man attacked another man in a bar in front of that man's kids, beating him unconscious and then kicking him in the head after he passed out while making anti-Mexican slurs. And on Sunday, a man with a shotgun opened fire in a church in White Settlement, Texas. The church's volunteer armed security squad returned fire, killing the shooter, but not until after the shooter had killed 2 people. Gun nuts pointed to this as proof that our lax gun laws work. There were good guys with guns at the church. They took out the bad guy with the gun, the shooter. Sidestepping the question, however, of why churches in small towns in Texas might need armed security squads in the first place. Oh, and one of the dead people at the church, a member of that armed security squad. It's New Year's Eve. I wanted to open the show with a little uplift, a little optimism, a little encouragement, a little pep talk about the work we need to do in 2020 and the fun and the sex we can have while doing that work. But holy fuck, did the news this week ever bring me down? What Donald Trump has unleashed, the hatred and cruelty and terror he has legitimized, the hatred and cruelty he has legitimized, the terror he has unleashed is tearing this country apart. We don't need to just reject Trumpism, which is far too cute a synonym for fascism. We need to crush it at the ballot box this November, like we kind of did in November of 2018. And while the news this week was draining, it sure as fuck drained me. There is cause for a little hopey, changey optimism. They're saying that Texas might go blue in 2020. Dems could win the Texas House for the first time in decades. And it's not hope and change Dems who are saying that Texas might go blue. It's shitting in pants Republicans who are saying it. Right now, Democratic Senate candidates in swing states are outraising Republican candidates, and scores of Republican House members have announced their retirements. They're leaving Congress not because they don't want to be politicians anymore, but because they believe they're going to lose. That is a good sign. Support for impeachment is up. Democratic candidates lead Trump in head-to-head polls. And there were reports earlier this fall about GOP fears of a total wipeout in 2020. The GOP's nightmare scenario, losing the House and the Senate and the White House, also known as the country's best-case scenario. But like Hillary Clinton's victory in 2016, we can't take it for granted. We have to do the work. We have to raise the money and register the voters, particularly in states where voter rolls are being purged right now. We have to fight the hate. We have to get people to the polls this November. Obama's victory in 2008 was by no means a foregone conclusion. And the joy that night, holy shit, it was overwhelming. After 8 years of George W. Bush, we elected Barack fucking Obama. Imagine the joy that you will feel if after 4 years of Donald Trump, we elect anyone else. Take your pick. Defeating Trump won't put the country back together. It won't put the poison back in the bottle. It won't break the hold Fox News has on your grandparents. But it will be a start. And it will be a joyous night, an ecstatic one. Here's to making it happen in 2020. Here's to making 2020 and 2021 the happiest of New Year's. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro free edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, And on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as much show, no ads, guests, L.V. Anderson joins us to talk about herpes hysteria. All that coming up on today's show. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's ThredUp.com/savage. ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is sponsored by OMG Yes, videos that explore new ways to increase sexual pleasure based on new scientific research. Get a discount on the new second season at omgyes.com/savage. That's omgyes.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Calm, the number one app for sleep and relaxation. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage.
Hi, Dan and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I have a son who is not yet middle school age, but my wife and I are fairly certain he is gay, like 99.999%. And we want to make sure there's lots in his world that shows all different types of people expressing themselves in all different types of ways and living all different types of lives and loving all different types of people. But a lot of the movies and TV shows and books that, you know, feature prominently gay people and gay stories, you know, really aren't for tweens or prepubescent kids. Some of it is too explicit. Some of it's just not going to be interesting to them. So I'm really hoping you can point us in the right direction and give us names of books, TV shows, and movies that make sense. For example, he loved Love, Simon. He was riveted by Love, Simon, and he begged us to find him more content like Love, Simon. So that was perfectly appropriate. So if you and your listeners could help guide us, we would really be grateful.
Well, I would definitely recommend the gay indie flick Weekend, the classic Cruising, the works of Bruce LaBruce and Greg Araki. I am, of course, kidding. None of those are appropriate films for tweens. Some adults aren't appropriate for those films, if you know what I mean. So I'm just tossing this out there to the listeners. I'm sure there's a lot of YA literature out there that would be good for your son to get his hands on, but I don't know the names of any of it because there was no such thing really as YA literature when I was a kid, although there were books and novels for kids. It just wasn't YA identified, and I aged out of those sorts of things before they were more widely available. So tossing this out there to the parents of gay tweens, gay teens, who have found the right movies, books, TV series to watch with your pre-gay or gay youngsters, please give us a call, 206-302-2064, and share.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 31-year-old cis queer woman living in a major Midwestern city. I've been married for about 8 years, in a relationship for about 10 with a 30-year-old trans man. We have a 5-year-old daughter together. We have a super great marriage, super great sex life. We both find that we have a better marriage overall, we feel more intimate, more connected, better communication, more patient with each other, just better overall when we are having a lot of sex. And it's not either of us being shitty or pushy with the other. I wouldn't even say either one of us has an unusually high sex drive. We're both, you know, average to a little high, but the benefit to our marriage is huge and obvious to both of us. So we have lots of sex. The only way that this is a problem is here. When I was in my late teens, unfortunately, I had to do some sex work to survive. I totally support sex workers who are doing it because they want to do it. Unfortunately, that was not the case. My husband knows about it. We don't talk about it, but he is, you know, understanding and supportive. As a result of this, I have a really hard time with, like, appointment feeling sex. I don't have a problem with scheduled sex in theory, like, you know, both clearing the evening and knowing that we're intending to at you know, sometime in the evening, you know, making sure we're all showered and fresh and everything. I don't have any issue with that. But, you know, when it's the whole, all right, it's time, you know, we've got limited time, come on, lay down, let's do this thing, it gets me really in my head, puts me in a really bad headspace. definitely totally turns me off. And he is about to be starting a new job, which is super demanding overnight. So we're going to have to be super strategic with our time together and our time for sex. So how do I not have this mental block come up every time, you know, we have a chance to enjoy each other and have sex together and, you know, get that great benefit to our marriage? I'm worried about this coming up more when we have so much less time together.
I'm surprised you didn't have to resort to scheduled sex or really begin to contemplate it in detail after you became parents. That's usually when people start thinking about or resorting to and ultimately, hopefully, reconciling themselves to and feeling positively about scheduled sex. Scheduled sex can be great sex, but scheduled sex for you, because of your history with survival prostitution, is traumatic. You don't like having an appointment. You don't like having a date and a time where you're expected to be sexual, because that throws you back into a time in your life when you were traumatized by your circumstances, and that's understandable. So what I think you need to do is schedule a time to have a conversation with your husband about this issue, that scheduled sex makes you unhappy, nervous, throws you out of the moment, and sex for you isn't enjoyable when sex is scheduled. So you won't be scheduling sex. You will be scheduling time together without the expectation that there will be sex, with the awareness that sex is good for you and good for your relationship, but no expectation that sex is going to happen when you make time with and for each other. And I think you can make that feel real for yourself by ensuring that a lot of your scheduled time, or some of it, at least out of the gate, is scheduled time together when sex isn't possible, just so that you're proving to each other that it's time together that you value and it's time together that you're scheduling. So some of your scheduled time together away from the kid and in between work pressures is going out to the movies, is going out to do an activity that you like, is hanging out with friends, scenarios where you can't be sexual, so there's no expectation, no pressure on you to be sexual. And then sometimes when it's just time together at home or time together at a place and a time where you might be sexual. And if your husband has demonstrated to you that it's time with you that he values, and that's what you're scheduling, not necessarily sex with you that you're scheduling or only sex with you that he values, I think that will help make it possible for sex to happen for you organically and in a way that feels healthy and joyful some of the time that you're scheduling time together with your husband. OMGS is a website devoted to women's sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMGS interviewed and surveyed thousands of women about what's made their pleasure better, physical techniques, psychological techniques, ways of guiding and talking with your partners. The findings, most importantly, this is crucial, the findings are peer-reviewed and published, then brought to life in fun, honest videos with regular women sharing from their own personal experience. Sometimes when it comes to learning about sex, you know, reading a paper published in a journal, it just isn't as effective as hearing someone's story, talking with someone. And what you find at OMG, yes, are people's stories from their own personal experience, but the science is there. They have been reviewed. This stuff is peer reviewed. People's ideas about what works for them have been put to the test scientifically and found to be effective and applicable and replicable, which is really important when it comes to science, and I think really important when it comes to sex. Another great thing about OMGS, you can watch the videos on your own. You can also watch them with your partner. And if you're having a hard time initiating a conversation with your partner about your pleasure, and many women find that difficult to talk about, watching these videos with your partner can help open that door. I got an email from a woman who sat down and watched a video with her partner, and he turned to her while watching and said, "Is this true for you?" about the video they were watching about pleasure. And she said, "Yeah, it is." And that allowed them to have the conversation, really bank-shotting off the video. That can be so effective. If you're having a problem talking with your partner about sex, consider subscribing to OMG Yes and watching the videos with them. Because research has shown that whether you want to discover new ways to build on your own pleasure or pleasure yourself, or find new ways to connect sexually with a partner, OMG Yes has positive effects. IU School of Medicine researchers did a study of OMG Yes users and partners. 95% reported experiencing pleasure in a way that felt new to them physically, and 2/3 of couples had significantly higher feelings of closeness and happiness in their relationship after watching OMG Yes videos. OMG Yes, not a subscription. Each batch of content is a one-time payment, like buying a book you keep forever, and your contribution goes on to fund future pleasure research. There are dozens of videos and demonstrations in each season of OMG Yes, with detailed information on techniques that you can try tonight. Learn more about the study at omgyes.com, and my listeners get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. I cannot recommend this service highly enough. Go omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan, 30-year-old cis male caller from the West Coast, calling to get some advice. Me and my girlfriend of 5 years were supposed to go on a trip to Europe, and I didn't end up going. It fell in a really busy time of work for me, and there's some other family commitments, and it just didn't work well for me to go. So she went on her own, so I thought, but it turns out another guy went with her. She didn't tell me about the other guy going. She didn't tell me when she got back. I only found out through some social media posts that he ended up going. So I'm pretty hurt. I don't know. I thought I was pretty GGG, but I feel like this was a pretty big lie, and I don't know what to do.
I'm only calling you back because you're a Magnum subscriber. And note to all other Magnum subscribers out there, I'm not going to do this ever again. So you can't just say Magnum subscriber and automatically get a call back. But I'm calling you back because you're a Magnum subscriber. Thank you for subscribing to the podcast.
Of course, man. It's a great podcast. I love it.
Because otherwise, there's really not much to your question unless there's extenuating circumstances here. Your girlfriend did something really deceptive and betrayed you in a way that you aren't required to retroactively approve of to be GGG or to hold on to your GGG card. It's, you know, GGG would have been she wanted to do something fun in bed with you, or she wanted to have this experience with somebody else and talked about it in advance with you and you okayed it or participated in it and indulged her. But this is just cheating piece of shit behavior. And I think you should break up with her if you haven't already.
Well, that's kind of how I feel. It's funny, we started talking about opening up our relationship right after we saw you down in Boston. But then the trip was like 2 weeks later, and we were like, we should talk about it after the trip. And then after the trip, I found out she went with this other guy. So I don't know if she was trying to preemptively get approval for it, but we had definitely tabled it as a thing that was going to happen.
Yeah,
and she didn't mention that.
She was probably sounding you out about it because she was already planning to go on the trip with this guy. And if you had reacted more enthusiastically when she floated opening the relationship, maybe she would have risked being honest with you. But she was going to go with this guy, with or without your approval. And
right.
I'm sorry. I think you should break the fuck up with her.
I think you're right. I think you're totally right.
Unless there's something super awesome about her and you can forgive a betrayal of this scale and a deception of this scale.
We've just been together for a long time, I guess. We've been together like 5 years. And
Do you live together?
It's like a shitty way to end it.
You scrambled your DNA
together? We had just started, no scrambling DNA. Okay. We had lived together for a while, and then we just parted living together to try and like make the relationship maybe healthier if we weren't together all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's over. I think you know, in some cases,
right.
There are relationships, there are people out there I know who've decided that living together isn't right for them, and they got separate apartments, sometimes separate apartments in the same building, and that saved the relationship. But the problem with that is there's also people who like float that because they want to end things without a tremendous amount of conflict. And so they will present moving out as an idea not to end the relationship, but to save it, when it's actually their first step out the door, that they actually are ending the relationship. And I think the taking this other guy on the trip was the proof that that's what was going on here.
Yeah, you're right, Dan. You're totally right.
I'm so sorry.
Okay.
But sometimes I hate to be right.
Nah, you're always right.
Not always. Thank you for your call, and thank you for subscribing to the Magnum.
Of course. Thank you so much for calling, Dan.
Bye.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye. Did you know that if everyone in the U.S. bought just one used item in place of a new item in 2020, it would save nearly 6 billion pounds of carbon emissions? That is like taking 500,000 cars off the road for a whole year, because the waste in the fashion industry is insane, which is why one of my New Year's resolutions personally is to shop more sustainably by thrifting, better for the planet and my wallet, and it couldn't be easier with ThredUp. ThredUp is the world's largest online thrift store, with up to 90% off estimated retail. You get the insane deals of thrifting with the convenience of online shopping, and you'll find all your favorite brands there. Score Nike for $6, Theory starting at $20, Lululemon for $27, J. Crew for $10, and more. You'll find it for a fraction of the cost at ThredUp. And today, you can get an extra 30% off your first order at ThredUp.com/Savage. Instead of spending hours at the racks, you can customize your search on ThredUp by your size, style, and budget so you can find the best deals instantly. It is so easy. Everything is in high-quality condition, and lots of items even have their original tags still on them. Plus, ThredUp gets new arrivals every minute, so there are always new treasures to find. Sustainable, stylish, totally affordable, good for the planet. You'll look and even feel better in 2020 with ThredUp. And for Savage Lovecast listeners, here's that exclusive offer just for you. Get an extra 30% off your first order at ThredUp.com/Savage. That's ThredUp.com/Savage for 30% off your first order. ThredUp.com/Savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy at-risk youth. I'm a 28-year-old hetero female living in the Northeast, and I have a little dilemma that I need a tiebreaker on. So I have this thing where when I'm having sex and I get kind of riled up, I tend to bite a little bit. I come from a long line of biters, and you know, my 94-year-old Nana still has all of her own teeth, so that's what I'm working with. And so I've been seeing this guy for a little while, and a couple of weeks ago, I bit his lip a little too hard, and it drew like a little bit of blood. It wasn't like, you know, flowing, or, you know, there weren't pools of blood, but there was a little bit. And, you know, and his lip was swollen, but it's not like I impaled him or anything, and, you know, he was going around calling it a fat lip and, you know, just whatever, basically being a baby about it. So my biting privileges were put on pause, and I took them back the other night, you know, cautiously so. But we were just like joking about it, and you know, and he seemed still like a little salty or sensitive about what happened. And he was like, "Well, I wonder what Dan Savage would tell you to do." And because I've been listening to the show for a while, I was like, "Well, you know, this is what I think." And we disagreed. So I thought that I would just go to the source for a judgment on biting. You know, Dan, am I biting too much, too hard? Like, what's the story here?
You come from a long line of biters. You come from a long line of people who chewed food. You come from a long line of people with teeth, and this distinguishes you and sets you apart from the rest of humanity. How exactly the rest of us are gumming our food and don't have grandparents that had teeth? I bumped on that. That was the first thing in your call where I was like, what? And then you tend to bite a little bit, but you broke the skin and there was blood and he was a baby about it. I'm sorry. I am on team aggrieved boyfriend in this dispute. Biting and biting someone's lip and potentially giving them a fat lip or a bloody lip is not okay. You have to be in control of yourself during sexual activity, and it's fine to be passionate. It's fine to feel a bit carried away, but not so carried away that you injure your partner. You have to maintain some control. Biting someone so hard you break the skin, and breaking the skin on the lip and inside someone's mouth is very easy, isn't okay. Just like dragging your fingernails across someone's back during a moment of passion so hard that you break the skin and leave claw marks all over the back isn't okay, unless you're with someone who enjoys being bitten. And those people are out there. Unless you're with someone who enjoys being scratched during sex to such an extent that they bleed and their skin breaks. Biting is really not something that people who don't enjoy that sensation get off on. And it's just a self-serving rationalization for you to say you're from a long line of biters, or you can't help it, or your partner, if they complain about it, is being a baby and sensitive. I'm sorry, broken skin and a bloody lip is something that a person has a right to be sensitive about and annoyed about and angry about. There's this fine line in sex where you want your partner and you want to feel like you're carried away, but there has to be some part of your non-reptile brain that is regulating your actions, even when you are, for the most part, carried away and is still taking in your partner's feedback and anticipating whether something would be welcome or not based on what you know of your partner. And you know your partner doesn't like to be bit, so you may not ever bite him again. I don't think you should bite him at all, but you certainly shouldn't bite him again ever so intensely or so with such pressure and force that you draw blood. And then call your favorite sex and relationship advice podcast host to ask if that was a problem and to say it wasn't a tremendous amount of blood. And then to say it wasn't like you impaled him or anything, invoking impaling for me, then invoking Vlad the Impaler, who was the inspiration for Dracula. Are you trying to tell us something with the impaling reference? Is there something else your boyfriend needs to know about dating you? Are you one of those young adults who is impacted by Twilight to such an extent that you now have a vampire fetish? That's an awesome thing to have. And there are people out there who have vampire victim fetishes. And you could go find one of them and date that person who wants to be bit with that much force. But so long as you're dating this guy, you can never, ever bite him again. I don't think at all, but certainly not with that force or any force. Gum him. Sleep is important every day of the year, but around the holidays, it can get even harder to find time for those precious hours. Parties with friends and family, endless shopping lists, long flights. When you finally get into bed, you want to make sure you can fall asleep and stay asleep. You should try Calm, the number one app for sleep and relaxation. It can really transform your nights, which means better days. Check out Sleep Stories, which are like bedtime stories for adults. They can help you fall into a deep, natural sleep in minutes. Stories are narrated by iconic voices like LeVar Burton and Nick Offerman. If you go to calm.com/savage, you'll get 25% off a Calm premium subscription. It includes hundreds of sleep stories and a ton of other content, like soothing music from artists like Sam Smith, guided meditations, breathing exercises, and so much more. Over 60 million people already use Calm. Join them today and get the sleep you need tonight. For a limited time, our show listeners can get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage. It comes with unlimited access to Calm's entire library, and new content is added every week. Get started today at calm.com/savage. That's calm.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I was just calling because my housemate and I were in a pretty heated discussion about the prevalence of vampire fetishism. And we're wondering if you could weigh in, maybe give us some statistics on how prevalent of a thing this is. I'm saying top 10, top 25 at least, and he doesn't believe me.
The Centers for Disease Control, National Institutes of Health, they don't keep a list of the most prevalent, most common sexual fantasies, kinks, fetish scenarios, unfortunately. So I can't tell you whether this one, vampires, is in the top 25 because there's no official ranking out there of the most popular fetishes. You don't have to get into an argument like this with your bros, though. You guys are treating fetishes and kinks like it's sports, like there are stats attached to them, and you can have an argument and you can win that argument. And this isn't an argument that you can win. You can only acknowledge that vampire fetishism, definitely a thing, a kink that some people have. Thank you, Twilight, Vampire Diaries, Interview with a Vampire, True Blood, everything else. And it's fascinating, of course, that some people have this kink and find a way to indulge themselves with consenting adults, unlike the previous caller. Find a way, please, to indulge yourself with a consenting adult, someone who wants to be bitten or bite. That's all you need to know. It's a thing. Some people learn to it. Some people do it. They do it with people who want it done to them. And there are no rankings. There are no stats. There is no Kink and Fetish Hall of Fame.
Hey, Dan. Quick question. Can you get high from someone's cum by barebacking if the top is high on meth? Thanks.
Can you tell me why you would be having sex, bareback or otherwise, with someone who was high on meth? Me, personally, I can't think of a good reason why you would be doing that in the first place.
Hi, Dan. I know you like wedding questions, so here's one regarding a situation my husband and I aren't sure how to handle. We were married a few months back, and there was a particular couple who came, friends my husband made in college. So, and I need to put a disclaimer out there. I'm not trying to sound spoiled, nor do I have animosity. I just need to know, we just need to know, how to proceed with the situation. They didn't bring a gift, and we don't know what to do regarding a thank you note. We decided to send, a couple days after the wedding, a really thoughtfully worded text message to them, within one that I want to stress was carefully crafted so as to make sure that any gift, be it an item or a check, didn't wind up in unintended hands. Wanted to make sure nobody at the venue kind of swiped it, you know, something of that nature. At first, we weren't going to send this, but we agreed if we had brought a gift to a wedding and it didn't make it to the couple, we would want to know so we can either stop the check or in the event it was stolen to have the host site or even the authorities look into it. They responded and it was, well, elusive, I guess you can say. They didn't really have an answer, like, oh, we'll mail it, whatnot, something to that effect. Like I said, these are friends of my husband from college. We see them about once a season, and they're part of a larger circle of friends that also contains some of my husband's best friends. So both of these people earn good livings. My husband has long suspected they might be having issues with money, though they themselves haven't been forthright about it. They also don't seem like the type to be, like, anti-gay marriage. Like, they came to the wedding. Honestly, none of that has any bearing on my question. I guess I just mention it to only to try and make sense of it all. So Dan, what do we do? A lack of a thank you card seems cold and maybe isn't the message we want to send, particularly if they're having a rough time. Also, on the other hand, we also don't want to call attention to the fact that we didn't get anything and, you know, run the risk of making them feel bad that way. They at least came for the experience and went to the length of being there. Do we thank them for that? Do we not send one? Are we being too nice? What do we do?
You say you don't want to be awful or you want to be nice. Well, you've already failed. You've already contacted this couple to ask them if maybe there was a gift and they said something ambiguous to you in response. You also then say that you have heard or might have some reason to think that they're having financial difficulties right now and they haven't been forthright about. What are they supposed to do? Fill out a financial disclosure form before they come to your wedding and let you know before they eat the chicken or the salmon or the prime rib or whatever it was you served that there would be no gift, that their presence was the only present that they could afford to give you at your wedding? Dudes, both of you, back the fuck off. Stop keeping track of who did or didn't give you a gift at your wedding. If you are aware of the gifts that came in, mention the gifts in the thank you notes to the people who came through with gifts. If this is the only couple at your wedding, the only attendees who didn't come through with a gift, let it go. Maybe it got lost. Maybe it fell behind the wall. Maybe they brought you, even though you have a kind of tenuous connection with them and they don't sound like terribly close friends. Maybe they brought you the most awesome present of, maybe they got you a BMW and one of the cater waiters stole it. Even if that's the case, calling someone who is at your wedding to say, hey, we noticed you didn't give us a gift, is so crude and tactless that you just have to err on the side of not getting the BMW, or the car thief who stole the BMW from your wedding gets away with it. Send them a thank you note. Still, that just says it was wonderful to have you there on our day. Period. The end. And you've already called them and they didn't come through with an answer, which means they didn't get you anything. And now things are just so awkward because you called. And now you've called me and I'm kicking the shit out of you on my podcast because this is just not okay and not what your wedding was about, was it? It wasn't about how big a pile of loot you guys could scrounge up. And guests at your wedding, really, you know, a gift is nice. A gift is thoughtful. I think a gift is expected, but it's not mandatory. And sometimes we have to be understanding that people may be in circumstances financially, particularly now in this economy where incomes have been flat for 40 fucking years and people are struggling and the rent is too damn high, that there may be some people at your wedding who are barely keeping it together and wanted to be there, wanted to love and support you, wanted to see their friends, but just couldn't cough up a blender or a BMW. And the gracious fucking thing to do in that circumstance is to keep your mouth shut, not call them up and harass them for for a blender or a BMW or anything else, you owe them a thank you note. And the thank you note is kind of a secret apology that you're going to make them. Send them the thank you note. Be gracious.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 28-year-old heterosexual male on the West Coast. My partner and I have been in a monogamous relationship for 5 years, living together for a little over 2.5 years. My partner is in the wildlife forestry field and works as a field technician. It's hard to find work in that field, so who you know for references really matters. Before she got her current job, she worked for a private contractor. This was a little over 3 years ago. He is an older man in his 50s. They would regularly work in areas that required them to spend multiple nights out in the field together, usually camping, every once in a while in a hotel, but never in a shared room. His home office, as I just said, is also located in his home. After about 2 months of working together, he told her, while they were working in his home, that he had developed romantic feelings for her. She told me about this, and it greatly upset me. She was adamant that she was not in any danger and that she could handle the situation. I trusted her, and they finished the field season out without any incident. She has remained friends with the man because she says he is, quote, an awesome friend and a very valuable work contact. Over the last year, they regularly go out and get drinks together alone to discuss work-related things. My partner knows how I feel about this and invites me along, but I have always declined this. I feel that the situation would just be uncomfortable and that I would feel more like a third wheel on a date. We recently took a much-needed weekend vacation. My partner left her phone open on the bed while showering, and I saw 2 texts come in from this man. I have never looked at any of my partner's phones and consider it a violation of privacy. Something felt off in the situation, though, and I justified the snooping to myself that the phone was unlocked, and it wasn't really snooping, but it was still a wrong thing to do, and I know that. In the text chain, she had told him that she was dreaming about him and was also sending him pictures, nothing dirty, of her on the trip. Just fun photos of her looking out over the ocean, that kind of thing. I hate that I looked at her phone, but I feel emotionally betrayed because she knows how I feel about this guy, and I don't really know how to handle the situation. My question is, did she cross a line and break my trust? Is telling your former boss that admitted having romantic feelings for you, that you were dreaming about him, emotionally cheating? Or am I being a distrustful asshole and I should just nut up and finally meet this guy to see how they interact?
The next time your girlfriend invites you out to drinks with this colleague of hers, for fuck's sake, go. Go have the drink. Go sit with them together. You are likely to discover, you are likely to realize as you sit and have a drink with them that the reality of their relationship, whatever it is not nearly as scary as what you sit at home imagining it to be when she's out having a drink with this guy. So take a deep breath, go have a drink with your girlfriend and her colleague, her former boss, and see for yourself what that relationship is really like. It is possible that they have a kind of romantic friendship. It is possible that he is still attracted to her. It's likely that he is still attracted to her. And I worry, actually, about whether he can keep that in check because he's already demonstrated an inability to self-regulate around a workplace crush, that he confessed his crush at the beginning of a kind of extended time when they were going to be thrown together and he was in a position of power over her. That's fucked up. That was not the time for him to confess that crush. That really put your girlfriend on the spot. And he should have known that it was possible that in her position, she may have felt pressured or coerced. She didn't feel pressured or coerced. She told him she didn't reciprocate those feelings, and they managed to salvage their working relationship and this kind of romantic friendship that makes you uncomfortable. Obviously, there is a connection there. You went through all of their text messages. If she were fucking him, you would know. She sent him photos, but no nude selfies, no inappropriate photos, just photos and text messages that betrayed an emotional connection that made you feel worse and made you feel jealous because that emotional attention you feel, perhaps rightly, is yours and should be yours alone. And she's directing some of that at him. in addition to going out for a drink with her and him the next time they hang out and invite you to accompany them, or she invites you to accompany them, you need to ask her what she's doing here. Obviously, this guy had feelings for her. Is she giving him just enough sort of thinking of you and here's a picture of me looking wistfully out over the ocean at the beach photos to keep that romantic attraction on his side alive for her own purposes? Is she being the exploitative one now? Is she the one who's now behaving slightly inappropriately? Or is she giving him what he demands? Is he, as a price for his mentorship or his guidance or his reference letters or his tips for jobs in the field that they're both in, is he demanding this kind of attention from her? Or does she feel pressured to come through with this kind of attention? You know, if I didn't have a boyfriend, the implication is maybe something would still be possible. Hopefully she's not incentivizing him to have you killed. Anyway, she has some explaining to do. I think you have a right to be insecure. I think you have a right to ask her questions and ask for some reassurance. I don't think you have a right to be as angry as you sound. It is possible that he had a crush on her. It is possible that she intellectually or professionally has a little bit of a crush on him and values this relationship. And there is intimacy there and a friendship there that has supplanted whatever was there, at least on his side, at the start. She can reassure you of that if it's true. And you can confirm, I think, for yourself with your own eyes that that's the case if you just show the fuck up the next time you're invited to go have a drink. And if you go and have that drink and you get the sense that you're being played, well, then you may have to trust your gut. Also, you may have to apologize to your girlfriend for invading her privacy. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some of your tweets. Definitely Lexi tweets, oh my goodness, listening to hashtag Savage Lovecast from the very first episode, and it's brutal. I've loved at Fake Dan Savage for as long as I can remember, but oh my, how far we have come. I'm super thankful for having the Magnum Edition so I can go all the way back to day one. Well, you're a braver listener than I, Lexi, because there are a lot of things I'll listen to, a lot of things I'll do, but I will not listen to the very first episodes of the Savage Lovecast. But Magnum subscribers are welcome to. Way back then, 13 years ago, we were still working out the kinks, working out the bugs, creating the show as we went. We're proud of the show now. We're proud of the shows then. But yeah, the seams were showing way back then. Thanks for being a listener. Lexi, thanks for being a Magnum subscriber. Phoebe Maltz Bovey tweets, obsessed with the 31-year-old Savage Lovecast caller wondering if it's bad feminism to date her former, as in a decade ago, professor. How did we get from things can be consenting adults but still ugh to everything is ugh unless proven otherwise and even then probably still bad? Put another way, if this prof is dating students by dating a 31-year-old former student who graduated a decade ago, this is quite the long game, as in this is not a prof dating students. And finally, Raymond Tsang tweeted out, podcast recommendation, Savage Lovecast. It's a relationship and sex advice podcast. I'll be honest, almost none of the material applies to me, but it's still good insight as to the spectrum of thought people apply to relationships and sexuality. Here's the thing about advice columns, advice shows, most of it doesn't apply to you, and then every once in a while, it does, and you remember some little bit of advice that you got a million years ago reading Ann Landers or Xavier Hollander, those are really a million years ago, or listening to my show, or reading Prudy, or Carolyn Hacks, some little bit of wisdom will pop back into your head at just the right moment. I think it's one of the reasons people listen to shows like this and read advice columns. Not because it applies right now, but because it might apply someday, and then it'll come back to you. All right, if you want me to read one of your tweets about the Lovecast on a future episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
I'm calling in reference to episode 687, the woman who was saying that she wanted to like pre-propose to her partner. And I just wanted to say, my wife and I had the same situation. I was going to propose. She wanted to let me know in some way when she was ready. And maybe you already know this, but I did not know her ring size. And so when she was ready to be proposed to, she let me know her ring size. And then I knew it was open season. And I got to propose. And it was awesome. And now we have two kids and we've been married for 5 years and life is grand.
Hi, Dan. So I'm calling in response to the caller that has this thing going on with a sexually oppressed guy who took a vow of celibacy and I think you, caller, are just really titillated with the idea that he will break his vow for you, and you're so sexy, and you have this like magical pussy that will make a person take this step, and it is going to be about how hot you are. Just drop this bullshit now. It's not, he will do this eventually with someone, and then we go back to what Dan said. If you want to feel like a sexual goddess, find a person who's sexually open and will role play those things with you.
Hey, Dan, if I was in a restaurant and I noticed a woman sitting there, obviously having an orgasm, would it be pervy of me to enjoy it? Because that's one of the things that makes me happiest, is to see women have orgasms. And if those, that couple was worried about anybody seeing them, they clearly wouldn't be doing it right out there in the open in the restaurant. So I'm just wondering, is it okay for me to perv on it and get off on it?
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Or even better, you can use the voice memo app on your phone and email us your question at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Using your phone means a better quality recording. We appreciate everyone who's using their phones to send us questions these days. And a big thank you to everyone who gifted the Savage Lovecast to their friends and relatives over the holidays this year. We really appreciate everyone who subscribed to the Magnum and everyone who gifts the Magnum. In addition to the Savage Lovecast, you're going to want to be listening to Blabbermouth, the Strangers Week in Review podcast hosted by Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Eli Sanders every Wednesday. Join me, Eli, Rich, Katie, Jasmine, Chase, Christopher, and others here at The Stranger for a look back at the horrors. Huff, my Dirty Little Porn Film Festival, is touring the country, a brand new program this year. Go to humpfilmfest.com to find out when Hump is coming to a city near you and to get tickets. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow LV Anderson on Twitter at @LV_Anderson. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you so much for downloading, and I hope everybody has a wonderful week.